Like many social animals, baboons live in large bands of mixed males, females, and juveniles. While there are dominant members, aggressive big males and powerful matriarchs, when it comes to mating, baboons tend to be promiscuous. So when a newborn arrives, you might think it's really not that clear who the father is. And yet, baboon males can be quite helpful to infants, playing with them and protecting them. The question this raises for biologists is why? Do they somehow recognize and care for their own offspring, or do they have some reason to care for all the newborns? That's the question Dr. Susan Albert set out to answer. She works with the Amboseli Baboon Research Project, an ongoing 30-year investigation of baboon biology and behavior in the Amboseli region of Kenya. Dr. Albert is also a professor of biology at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
First of all, can you tell me a bit about the Amboseli Baboon Research Project? What's it all about?
Well, we've been monitoring this population continuously since 1971. So we have literally near daily records of these animals' lives in an unbroken stream since 1971.
How many animals are you studying?
Well, the population of baboons in Amboseli is continuous with a larger population in that part of Africa, but our study population is just a subset of animals, of about 250 animals in that population.
What kind of parenting do you see these male baboons doing?
Well, there are a number of behaviors that male baboons and primates like them give towards juveniles that could be construed as paternal care. They'll do things like allow a juvenile to maintain proximity, to stay close to them. Males are big, and they sort of create a safe space for a kid to hang out in. If a male is foraging on a food that might be challenging, then the kid might get scraps of that food as they drop from the male's hands. It's often the case that if an infant is orphaned, that is, if its mother dies, but it's old enough to survive her death because it's weaned, that a male will adopt it and carry it during daily travel of the group. And of course, the other and most measurable thing that males do is they intervene in fights on behalf of juveniles. A juvenile will get into a dispute with another juvenile or with an adult, and an adult male will frequently get in between the juvenile and its opponent, or the juvenile will run behind the male will threaten the opponent or chase off the opponent. These behaviors are active interventions that help the juvenile.
So I guess that led you to ask the question why the males were doing this.
Right. It turns out that there are sort of two predominant theories for why males would give these behaviors that look like paternal care. One possibility is that really is paternal care, that they're caring for their own offspring. The other possibility is that it's what we call mating effort. They're taking care of the kid as an incentive to the kid's mother to mate with the caring male. The evidence that you need in order to differentiate those two hypotheses is you need genetic evidence. You need to know who the males are related to. A number of researchers have evidence suggesting that males that are likely to be the kids' fathers are taking care of them. But there's also a fair amount of good evidence from a number of primate species that mating effort is a good explanation for at least some of what males do.
So you're saying then generally the two ideas are one, I'm going to protect this kid because it's mine and therefore my genes will go on, the other being, oh, you've got kids. I like kids.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's right. And that explanation has sort of gained ground. It's become a very popular explanation for what's going on.
So how did you figure out which it was?
Well, we did a paternity analysis using DNA that we extracted from feces, from fecal samples that we collected for these animals, and we assigned paternity unambiguously to about 75 kids. We then went back to our behavioral data, which we had collected in the previous 3 years, and said, so, who are they caring for?
You looked at their feces to get genetic material?
We did indeed.
Thank God for graduate students.
Right, yeah. And Kenyan field assistants, actually, are very dedicated and highly skilled Kenyan field assistants. It actually is harder than it sounds to get a good collection of DNA from feces.
So what did you find?
Well, we found that it was fairly clear who the fathers were when we looked at the genetic analysis, and we found that males help their own offspring. They intervene on behalf of their own offspring much more than they intervene on behalf of unrelated offspring.
How much more?
Well, let me put it this way. Every male in our study intervened on behalf of at least one kid that was not his own. But every male, with the exception of two, intervened much more on behalf of their own, from twice to 10 times as much.
Wow. Now, if, as we were saying here, the baboons are somewhat promiscuous, how do the males identify their own offspring?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a couple of possibilities, and we don't know the answer at this point. One possibility is they use a physical cue. Do you look like a member of my family? Do you smell like a member of my family? Another possibility is that they use their own mating behavior. They remember which females they mated with, and they keep track of how much of her time when she was likely to conceive that kid they managed to monopolize, right? What we really think is going on, actually, is that males are using all the available cues they can and sort of combining them into an estimate of who their likely kids are. Yeah, they might actually make mistakes sometimes. So when males care for kids that aren't their own, that could be mating effort. That could be support for this hypothesis I told you about. But it also could be a mistake, right? They put the information together wrong. Now, this is, of course, what humans do for all types of information. We don't rely on a single cue to tell us, for instance, who our relatives are. We rely on all sorts of cues. Does the baby look like Grandpa Harry? Well, yeah, it does. We pay attention to how people behave towards this kid, and people smell children. Oh, babies smell good. So there are all sorts of cues that we put together, and it's likely that baboons do the same thing.
Well, what's the advantage to the male to take care of its own?
Well, I think it's the one that comes to you intuitively. It's that their offspring are more likely to survive. Baboon juveniles, like juveniles of all mammals, are vulnerable. Mortality in our population in the first 2 years of life is 30 to 50%, depending on the year. And that's not unusual for a wild mammal population. So juvenile mammals require a tremendous amount of investment and are very vulnerable. And if a male can contribute to his offspring surviving through that vulnerable period, he should.
So what does all this tell you about the sophistication of baboon social life?
There's two different things I think it tells us. In baboon societies and primate societies like it, which is many different primate societies, and indeed many mammal societies, it's been well known for decades that maternal relationships, relationships between mothers and offspring, between sisters who are related through their mother, between aunts and nieces who are related through a female, are very strong. And those maternal relationships, those matrilineal kin relationships, really structure these societies and structure the animals' lives. What our work is beginning to show is that paternal kin relationships structure these societies too. And that's interesting and surprising because that's a much less obvious set of relationships than the matrilineal relationships, and yet it appears to be just as important.
So they're more family than we thought.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Dr. Alberts, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Susan Alberts is in the biology department at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. Check our website for links to the Amboseli Baboon Research Project to learn more about her work with these fascinating animals.